Being an effective manager, qualification number two, Moses. We're going to do a little case study on Moses. I listened to someone do this long ago. I can't remember who it was. But it was a fascinating thing. Instead of just reading the text and, you know, some kind of a sermon that comes out of the text, we're actually looking at Moses the person, and we're trying to figure out sort of the personality or, you know, what was Moses really, kind of the psychology of Moses. And the whole goal here is to become self-aware. Say you're a manager, you're a leader, and you do things, but you do things as an imperfect human being, and you do things out of the struggles and hurts of your own life. And it's good for a person in leadership to be self-aware, to know, you know, your strengths and your weaknesses, your tendencies. And so we're going to look at Moses with the idea of seeing who Moses is and what he was struggling with, and then sort of apply it to ourselves as managers. And the story of Moses, of course, is in the book of Exodus, but the story of Moses gets told in kind of a summary way in the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 6, the church is growing fast, and the apostles can't keep up with the work, so they find some other leaders. In chapter 6, you'll discover there's a list of leaders, and one of those leaders, his name is Stephen. Stephen is chosen to help out with the widows, help out with the waiting on tables, are the words there, some kind of physical needs. But in the next chapter, Stephen is preaching, and he gets in trouble with the religious leaders, and they are quizzing him, and he's trying to defend himself, and so he starts telling the whole history of Israel, and then he's going to show how Jesus and his death and resurrection fit into that, and then they stone him. Well, in the middle of that, he sort of gives a summary view of Moses. It's very, very interesting. So we're going to look at Acts chapter 7. We're going to start with verse 20, and we're going to look at Moses and where he may have got a hurt. Now, we have to sort of extrapolate this. We don't know if it's all true or not, but, you know, just walk with me as we treat Moses as kind of a case study. So, Acts 7, verse 20. About that time, Moses was born. His parents hid him at home for 3 months. Why did they hide him? Pharaoh was threatened. The people of God were in Egypt. They became slaves. The Pharaoh was threatened by their success and their numbers, and so he ordered that the male children be thrown into the river, that they be killed, and Moses' parents didn't want to do that. So his parents hid him at home for 3 months, and when at last they could no longer keep him hidden, they had to abandon him. Okay, now they didn't just, you know, abandon him, but they made this little ark, and they put the little boat, put Moses in it, and they sent it down the river because they knew the Pharaoh's daughter would be there, and she picked him up and raised him as her own. But I like these words, abandon him. Those are the words. And one wonders how Moses felt about it. Now, the family is just trying to save him. But from the kid's point of view, he had a family, and now he doesn't. And now he's in some other family. And I think that's true of many adopted children, that at some point they wonder about their real mother or their real father and wonder, well, what happened? Why didn't they keep me? You know what? Maybe they appreciate their new home and they have no complaints about it, but still there's that nagging question, what happened? What was it something about me? Or it's hard not to feel abandoned. So Moses in some ways is abandoned by his family, and now he's being raised in another culture that is not his own. He's in a way the outsider in this new culture. Maybe he looks a little different from them. Everyone knows that he's the outsider. Okay, so Acts chapter 7, verse 23, the hurt demands attention. So he's maybe he has this hurt, but he's raised in this Egyptian home, and he's, you know, succeeding and learning and growing and doing things. But the hurt is somewhere in there. Acts 7:23, when Moses was 40 years old, He decided to visit his own people, the Israelites. He saw one of them being mistreated by an Egyptian, so he went to his defense and avenged him by killing the Egyptian. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them, but they did not. Okay, so Moses is being raised in the Pharaoh family, and things are going along. And then all of a sudden at age 40, I mean, why didn't he do it earlier? But at age 40, he goes, hey, I'm going to reconnect with my people. And that's often the way it is with a hurt. You receive a hurt, maybe early on, maybe parents that didn't love you or someone didn't recognize you, or you went to school and you started off a little slow, and so people labeled you and you had this label and you fought to overcome it. And, you know, we get these hurts, we get these little nicks, you know, bruises in our lives, and we want to overcome them. So it's like, I don't know if you've ever gone to the beach and you have a big beach ball, you know, or a ball that is filled with air, and you try to keep that beach ball under the water. You try to press the ball under the water, and it takes everything you've got. I mean, your arms and your shoulders, and you're trying to hold this ball under the water, and you can succeed a little bit. I mean, it takes a lot of effort, but eventually your arms get tired or it gets awkward, and all of a sudden the ball goes shooting up. And that's what happens with people. They try to hold on to their hurt. They try to cover it up, push it down, try to act like it's not there. But then, you know, beyond their control, at some moment that they could never predict, all of a sudden the ball just pops up. I had a young man who came to my office once, and he felt like he wasn't being recognized. He felt like he had leadership potential, but no one was letting him lead. And, you know, people have told me I'm a natural leader, and so on. So, you know, he went on and on about this. And, you know, finally I said, well, maybe some of these things are true, but I have not seen it. I mean, I didn't see any of this leadership thing he was talking about. I thought, I'm just going to tell you the truth. Some people don't dare tell you the truth, but I'm going to tell you the truth. And he got all mad. So he ran out of the office and didn't see him again. 6 months later, he comes back. He says, you know, when I left your office, I was so angry at you, and I left, and I, you know, but then I started having these memories come back, memories of being abused. And so I've been in counseling and been with some groups trying to help me do that. And I just want to come back and, number one, apologize, but also thank you, because, you know, that was the trigger that got me to do this. See, the ball, you try to hold it under, you don't know what is even there. You don't even know that the hurt and the pain is there. And all of a sudden it pops up into your life because something happened, or, you know, 40 years later, I don't know. All of a sudden something is going on and it pops up into your life and you have to deal with it. So that's what happens to Moses. We don't know exactly what happened, but after 40 years, he wants to reconnect. So it pops up. He wants to do something about this hurt, this pain. Why did I get abandoned? And so he comes back to his people and he tries to reconnect. And what happens? It doesn't work. And that's often the case. People will have a memory, abuse, something. They go back to their parents. They want to, you know, settle this thing, find out what happened. And they're ready to do it, but their parents aren't. Everyone's in denial. No one wants to deal with this. Everyone thinks you're crazy. Everyone thinks you're making stuff up. And you're like disillusioned. It's like finally you want to talk about this and no one wants to talk about it. It just makes it messier. You want to deal with it and no one else does. And so what does Moses do? He runs. You know, okay, I'm out of here. And so he flees and he becomes an alien, grows up, lives in a totally separate place, becomes a shepherd. You know what? I'm going to reject the Pharaoh and that life. I'm going to reject my upbringing, everything. I'm just going to go do my own thing. And that's what people often do. And they get some healing, perhaps. And they're able to put that ball under the water again. The hurt gets leveraged. What is leverage? Leverage is when you got this negative thing, but it can be used for something positive. So, Acts 7 verse 30, after 40 years, interesting, it's another 40 years, right? The first thing was 40 years, and now it's another 40 years, had passed. An angel appeared to Moses in the flames of the burning bush in the desert near Mount Sinai. When he saw this, He was amazed at the sight, and he went over to look more closely, and he heard the Lord's voice. I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Moses trembled with fear and did not dare to look. Then the Lord said to him, take off your sandals, for the place you are standing is holy ground. I have indeed seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I have heard their groaning, and I have come down to set them free. Now come, I will send you back to Egypt. This is the same Moses whom they had rejected with the words, who made you ruler and judge? He was sent to their ruler and deliverer. He was sent to be their ruler and deliverer by God himself through the angel who appeared to him in the bush. Okay, so Moses has this hurt. He was rejected in some ways, at least that's how he felt by his family. He was raised in a foreign place that maybe never really accepted. Then he tries to reconnect. It didn't really work. He now flees across the desert. He actually becomes the perfect person for God to choose to go back. God is going to leverage all the hurt and pain of his life to his glory. And so, you know, and that's what God sometimes does. You have hurts and pains, but sometimes those hurts and pains actually pave the way for you to do great things. Okay, so Moses goes back. He, gets the people to kind of the 10 plagues, and the people complain, and then, you know, and God keeps giving the plagues. Finally, they leave Egypt. They get to the river, and now Pharaoh and his chariots are coming, and again, the people complain. Moses parts the sea. They go across the sea. They go to Mount Sinai. Moses goes up to the mountain. He gets the law of God. And when he comes down from the mountain, Moses' face is shining. You know, Moses saw God face to face. He's the only one that's done that. And his face is radiant because of that. And people notice it. Wow, Moses, your face is shining. You got to do something. It's like a, you know, 10,000 watt light bulb. And so Moses, first of all, you know, Moses' face shining was like a badge for Moses. You know, Moses, all of his life, wanted to be significant. I just want to fit in. I just want people to like me in some ways. And now he comes down from the mountain and his face is shining. And it's a symbol of him being somebody, but it also pushes him away from the people. So Moses puts a veil. Moses puts a veil so it's not so blinding. People can't see the light of his face. But the veil now becomes symbolic of his importance. I mean, how many men are running around the Israelite camp with a veil on? He's the only one. So when people see this guy running around with a veil, they go, well, who's that? Oh, that's Moses. Well, why has he got a veil on? Well, he's got a veil on because he saw God face to face. And his face is radiant. Wow. He must be really important. Yes, he really is important. Okay. So the veil becomes this symbol of a person's importance and self-worth. Okay. Now what's very interesting. So when Aaron, Exodus 34, when Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant and they were afraid to come near him. When Moses finished speaking to them, he put a veil over his face. Okay, what happens to this veil? 2 Corinthians 3:7. Paul's writing to the church in Corinth, but he's writing about a subject, and all of a sudden he throws this business of Moses' veil in there. The old way, the laws etched in stone, led to death. Though it began with such glory that the people of Israel could not bear to look at Moses' face. For his face shone with the glory of God. Now, this phrase. Even though the brightness was already fading away. So, when Moses came down from the mountain, it was like a 10,000 watt light bulb. He puts the veil over it and he runs around. And when people see the veil, it's like, whoa, wow, the guy with the veil. You know, it must be Moses, must be this important person who saw God. Okay, but soon, it's only shining at a 5,000 watt. Soon, it's only 1,000 watt. Soon, it's just like a flickering candle. But does Moses take the veil off? No, he doesn't. He keeps the veil, even though the veil is not needed. Why? Because the veil is symbolic of who he is. People see the veil and they say, wow, oh, that's Moses. That's the one who saw God. A manager must be self-aware of the veils that he or she has leveraged. What we're talking about is the hurts and pains and what we've done to overcome those hurts and pains in our lives that have helped us succeed. So a manager has to be aware that some of the reasons why he succeeds at what he does is not just because of talents and gifts. It's because of really working hard to hide something. Well, what kind of veils? The veil of power. Some people want power. They need power because they felt powerless growing up. They were in a horrible family situation and they didn't feel like they had any power. And so now that they're adults, they go into situations where they can grab power and there's never quite enough. So they're successful people, but it's to cover up a hurt. Number two, the veil of success. I'm going to beat you. And when I beat you, I'm finally going to be somebody. I'm only somebody when I succeed. And I got hurt when I was little. Maybe I was a slow starter. I was the last in the class. Maybe I wasn't good at sports. There's some reason, some hurt that I received where I want success to be the anecdote, the thing that will help me be better. There's a story, it's a funny story of a guy who goes into a big office, you know, a corporate building, and he's there to fix something on, but he's like a data processor person, and he's got a suit on, and he's fixing something, and then he notices the president's office, and it's empty. So he walks into the president's office, and it's, you know, got the mahogany and the desk, and it's got the leather chair, and so he looks around, and he sits behind the desk. He just pretends, you know, oh, this is nice. Sits in the leather chair and, you know, plays with the pens on the desk. It's like, you know, this is what it's like to have arrived. Okay? So he's sitting there sort of enjoying himself. And all of a sudden, a worker, it's Saturday, a worker comes walking in. You know, he's got the white suit on and worker comes walking in. And he, you know, he doesn't know what to do. He feels embarrassed. So he quickly, without thinking, just grabs the phone, picks it up, says, yeah, I told you. Yeah, we got to sell that. I don't care what we get. Look, I'm counting on you to do it. Now just get it done. And then he hangs up the phone. Then he looks at the guy, the worker guy that just walked in. And he says, what do you want? And the worker guy is sort of embarrassed. And he, you know, looks down a little bit and finally looks up and says, well, I'm just here to hook up the phone. Success. Sometimes it's a cover-up for how we feel, our hurts and our pains. Number three, the veil of stoicism. Stoic philosophy was around during Jesus' day. It was a popular thing in the Roman world. And it was this idea that what's going to happen is going to happen. Just accept whatever it is, good or bad, it's just going to happen. And some people have put that veil on. They emotionally got burned somewhere. They emotionally got involved with a relationship and they ended up getting burned by that relationship and they're not going to get burned again. So they're just not going to invest emotionally again. Now, because they're not invested emotionally, they become really successful at what they do. A lot of managers are like that. They never get mad. They never get happy. They're just even keeled. And sometimes they succeed at that, but the reason they're succeeding at that is because they turned off the emotions. And they turned off the emotions to protect some hurt and some pain. The veil of isolation. Instead of dealing with people, getting burned by people, I'm just not going to be with people. But because I'm isolated, I get a lot done. And so we give a lot of stuff to a person like that, and they stay isolated, but it's because of a hurt. Or the veil of humor. Some people learned long ago, you can keep people at a distance with a little humor. When someone's getting too close, you just throw out a joke. The way you handle everything in life is just throw out a joke. You never can talk to the person, you never can deal with anything, because everything is reduced to something that's humorous. The veil of criticism. A lot of people discovered long ago that a good offense is better than a mediocre defense. My cousin, he's 2 months younger than I am. When he was 5 years old, his family went to a truck stop and they got out of the car and there was another five-year-old that he didn't know at all. He walked up to that five-year-old and punched him in the mouth. And my aunt and uncle like grabbed him and said, what are you doing? Why did you punch him in the mouth? And he said, well, I had to hit him before he hit me. That's what criticism is like. If I can be critical of all those around me, I can keep them at a distance. They don't have time to criticize me. They don't have time to find my fault. They don't have time to find my hurt. See, I'm hiding my hurt behind a wall of criticism. I'm always on the offense. People are looking out for me. Number 7, the veil of conformity. Some learn if you just agree with everybody, you know? You just say yes to everybody. Doesn't mean you are going to do it. You just say yes to everybody. The veil of flirtation, or I would say the veil of charm. A lot of charming folk never learn anything. Any mistake that they make, they just charm their way out of it. They know how to just make it okay, make it fine, and they never really learn anything. Or flirtation. Flirtation is trying to win something. A lot of salespeople are really flirtatious. They want to throw something out there and they want you to grab hold of it. They want to sell something. And a lot of really good salesmen, they're good salesmen, but why? Now, maybe they're just good with people and this is what they like to do, but maybe the good salesman is a good salesman because he needs the validation of someone buying from them. And I need it every day. I need someone to say yes to whatever it is that I'm doing, or I don't feel good about myself. Maybe it's a lack of attention. I grew up and my parents didn't have time for me. And it just feels good when I can get somebody to do something. See, I can control that. I can make that happen. I felt powerless as a young person, that I couldn't make anything happen, that people didn't notice me. And now I get a good feeling when I can get someone to buy from me. Number 9, the veil of attention. You know, I do whatever I can get, you know, I do good things to get attention, but I'm willing to do bad things to get attention. I'm willing to create disaster so that people pay attention. I just want attention one way or another. Why? Because I grew up and I didn't have attention. Maybe I'm one of 12 kids and no one noticed me. Or I was in a class and I was just in the middle of the pack. I wasn't good at sports. I wasn't great at the grades. I just blended in, and I don't want to blend in. I want to be somebody. Or number 10, the veil of order. My wife is from a family that, you know, if you did something creative, they didn't say anything. If you did something adventurous, they were almost afraid, you know, like, you shouldn't try that. But what they did honor was order. Things are in order. The shoes are here. Everything is in its place. Everything is neat and tidy. So I married a girl like that. She was raised in a home where order was honored. And adventure was not. I was raised in a family where adventure was honored and order was not. So you can imagine what our life was like. You know, I'm into adventure. You know, I think that's what's cool. And my wife is into order. Well, some people can be hiding behind the order. They don't care whether something gets done. It's whether things are in order. And they keep it in order. And a lot of managers are really good at this. My wife's sister is a librarian. You got to keep the books in order, and she's excellent at it. She runs an incredible library. But what hurt is she? Is she still? I get the impression, at least from her, that she's still looking for her father to say, you know what? I just love you. I love you for you, not because you put things in order. The veil of control. Maybe a person grew up in a family where there was no control. It was an out of control place. And to control something. You know, anorexic people are anorexic because they can control something. They can control what they eat or don't eat. And it feels like at least something. The veil of what? The point of this whole message is you got to figure out what veil you may be hiding behind. You may be talented and gifted and a great leader and a great manager, but if some of your leadership and some of the greatness that you've become is because of the work you do to cover something up, it's like that ball you're trying to hold under the water. Yeah, you're succeeding right now, but at any point, this thing could just pop up right in the middle of your life. And it often does. And that's exactly what happened to Moses. In Numbers chapter 20, In the first month, the whole Israelite community arrived at the desert of Zin, and they stayed at Kadesh. There Miriam died and was buried. There was no water for the community, and the people gathered in opposition to Moses and Aaron. They quarreled with Moses and said, "If only we had died when our brothers fell dead before the Lord. Why did you bring the Lord's community into the wilderness, that we and our livestock should die here? Why did you bring us out of Egypt to this terrible place? It has no grain or figs or grapevines or pomegranates. There's no water to drink." And Moses and Aaron went from the assembly to the entrance of the tent of meeting, and they fell face down, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord said to Moses, "Take the staff, you and your brother Aaron, gather the assembly together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will pour out water. You will bring water out of the rock for the community so that they and their livestock can drink." So Moses took the staff from the Lord's presence, just as he commanded him, and he and Aaron gathered the assembly together in front of the rock. And Moses said to the people, "Listen, you rebels, must we bring water out of this rock?" And then Moses raised his arm, and he struck the rock twice with his staff. Okay, what's going on? Moses is standing before the people, and it's like he's saying, okay, I was born into a family, and they abandoned me. They abandoned me into some foreign place, and I was raised in a foreign place where I didn't really fit in. After 40 years, I go back to my own people to reconnect with them, and what happens? They reject me, and so I run. I'd say, okay, fine. I don't fit in the Pharaoh thing. I don't fit in with the Israelite thing. Fine, I'm just going to go with the Midian thing. I'm just going to start my own little culture and become a shepherd and have my own kids and be done with it. So he does that. And then 40 years later, God says, no, I have prepared you to go back to these people. So Moses does it. He obeys. He goes. He goes through all the hassle with the Pharaoh, all the 10 plagues, back and forth, back and forth. Takes the people out, finally gets them out. The Red Sea thing, the Pharaoh is coming down with the chariots. People complain again. Why'd you take us? Why are we following you, Moses? Why don't you leave us in Egypt? Moses separates the water. He comes. They wander in the desert for these 40 years, running around in the desert, complaining. They complain about water. He gets water. They complain about not having meat. He gets the meat. He's like bending over backwards to help these people. And what do I get? After all this, after giving up my whole life for all you people, what do I get? Complain again. I mean, we did the water thing already, and you saw how God provides, but here we are again. You're out of water, and so now you're complaining again. You want to go back to Egypt. I'm so tired of this. Finally, Moses cannot wear the veil anymore. Finally, Moses can't keep the ball underwater, and the ball just comes up. And Moses takes his staff, and he hits the rock. I'm not speaking to the rock. Moses literally hits the rocks. And that's what's going to happen to you, too. You don't deal with the hurt in your life. You may be able to cover it up. You may be able to become a great success. A lot of successful people are out there. They succeed, but their families get killed in the end. Their marriages get destroyed in the end. People's faith gets destroyed in the end. You can succeed on the outside. You can put the veil on and do amazing and great things. And a lot of it because of that veil. But in the end, that hurt, that pain is going to get you in the end. Eventually, the ball bounces up. It comes up and it destroys your life. So, what am I saying? I'm saying as a leader, you have to be aware of the hurts and pains in your life. If you want people around you to deal with their hurts and pains, and that's what the Christianity thing is all about. It's about dealing with your hurt, your pain, your sin, so that Jesus can heal you. If you don't deal with it, it will destroy something. So, as a manager, when are you close to hitting the rocks? Or what issues do you need to deal with? Doesn't mean you're going to fix everything, but at least you should be aware.